Good morning. This is Lucy Lewis with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILF Show. And we are glad you're with us here this morning. Our guest today is going to be Steve Deere, who's the Executive Director of the People of Faith Against Death Penalty. And Steve will be joining us shortly here in the studio. Until then, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about this show so that you can be looking forward to it in the days and weeks to come. The WILF Show went on the air in February, and our purpose is to try to provide opportunities for our listeners to hear some of the most important and engaging social justice speakers in our community. We think that it's really important for all of us, particularly those of us who try to be active in issues that concern our community, to also be very informed about the issues of our day. So we provide opportunities both for local speakers, like Mr. Deere, as well as those who are going through the community, perhaps on a speaking tour or other engagements, to provide an opportunity to speak with our listeners on important issues. We're very concerned about what happens here in our local listening area of Carrboro. We're concerned about issues of water justice, environmental racism, equity and access to education and housing, and dealing with the current economic crisis that's affecting so many of our listeners. We're concerned about issues on the state stage. That's why we're looking at issues like the death penalty or the recent HKJ Historic Thousands on Jones Street mobilization, for example. All of us obviously are concerned about the national level as well, because a lot of the policies and decisions that are made on the national level affect our daily lives. That's why we're concerned about national issues of health care for all, for example, or improving our educational system. And clearly, foreign policy is an issue that's not just a question of out there, but it affects our pocketbooks, it affects our lives, and it affects the lives of people around the globe. So we've been proud to be able to provide speakers on issues about the Middle East peace, about the Israeli-Palestine conflict, and about the continuing war and the threat of war in Iraq. So we hope that you'll be able to join us every Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock for the WILF Show. WCOM, as you know, is an all-volunteer, listener-supported radio station in Carrboro, North Carolina, and we depend upon our listeners for support. So we hope that you can look us up on our website, communityradio.coop. For more information about other important shows, you can also provide donations. And we're always looking for underwriters for shows who can provide support to this important community effort. In a day when so much of the media is run by giant corporations and increasingly monopolized so that there aren't different viewpoints and perspectives out there, WCOM provides an important community service, and we encourage your support, and we thank you for your listenership. Now I'd like to talk about a few upcoming events in our area. We have the Carrboro Film Festival, which is now in its third year, and it's seeking submissions. The only requirements are that the filmmaker at some time in their life had a brush with Orange County and that the film is 20 minutes or less. The early deadline for submissions is August 29th, and the late deadline is September 22nd. Submission forms are on the festival website at www.carrborofilmfestival.com. And the film festival itself will be held on Sunday, November 23rd at the Century Center in Carrboro. So for all of you aspiring filmmakers, this is an opportunity to get some recognition, get your name out there, and we encourage you to be part of the third annual Carrboro Film Festival. We also have a notice here about an upcoming giant yard sale benefit for Barack Obama, which is going to include voter registration, and that's going to be held Saturday morning, August 16th, from 8 a.m. on at Johnny's Coffee Shop at 901 West Main Street, Carrboro. And this benefit is going to have a huge selection of household items, furniture, clothing, books, and more. So come on out on Saturday morning, August 16th. And speaking of voter registration, we certainly hope that all of our listeners are registered to vote in the upcoming election. This is an important moment, an important time in our country's history. And no matter what your political views, it's important to take a stand and have your voice and your vote be counted and heard. So this is important for all of us. There are a number of ways that you can be involved with voter registration, both in helping to get people registered, spreading the word to friends and family for those who say, I'm going to get around to it. Now's the best time to do it. North Carolina is fortunate in that we have early voting, which means that if you think that there might be any reason on voting day itself in November, whether it's carpools or bad weather or feeling under the weather, you can go ahead and do early voting. So we're going to put our music back on for just a minute, give you a chance for a little musical interlude while you drink your coffee, and we'll be back on the air in just a few minutes with Steve Deere, who's the executive director of the People of Faith Against the Death Penalty. So stay tuned and sit back and enjoy this music. I'm Lucy Lewis, and we're back with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, The Wilf Show. And we are so pleased to have with us today our guest, Steve Deere, who's the Executive Director of People of Faith Against the Death Penalty. Thank you so much for joining us, Steve.
Glad to be here.
I'd like to begin by asking you to tell us a little bit about People of Faith Against the Death Penalty and how the organization got started.
Well, we were started in the early 90s by a group of clergy and lawyers who are involved with congregations and the Criminal Justice Committee of the North Carolina Council of Churches, and they decided that they would talk to legislators, and they were told that the legislators never hear from people from congregations or the religious community about the death penalty. So we were started with an idea to change that, to educate and mobilize faith communities to act to abolish the death penalty in North Carolina. And we were officially started in 1994. And 4 years ago, we decided to become national in scope, because there really isn't any national effort to educate and mobilize faith communities. And the national church bodies that have been opposed to the death penalty for 50 years, including the Lutherans, Episcopalians, Methodists, all the mainline Christian churches, need to be doing a lot more, and they say so, their staffs say so themselves. So we're trying in a modest way to encourage and help groups across the country to take action. But we're still primarily doing work in North Carolina.
And as I understand it, you're not just concerned about Christian faith communities, isn't that right?
Right. We're an interfaith group. Two of our board presidents have been Jewish. We've had a Nation of Islam minister as our board president. Chapel Hill Zen Center is a member of People of Faith, and our kind of unofficial motto is, if you're comfortable with us, we're comfortable with you.
Great. Now, I know that your mission is to educate and mobilize faith communities to eliminate the death penalty, and you're really concerned about the perpetrators and the alleged perpetrators of violent crimes, but what about the victims and the victims' families? What about them? Who's speaking for them?
Well, the death penalty does nothing for victims, and we come out of an ethic of restorative justice, which is an idea that came out of the Mennonite tradition and in Canada, where when a violent crime happens, there's a hurt not just on the victim but on the community, and there are needs in three areas. The victim's need, the victim and the victim's family needs attention and restoration. The community has a hurt and needs attention and restoration. And even the offender has needs that need attention. And the death penalty is an example of retributive justice, where we're just focusing on punishing a few offenders, and we, through a system that largely leaves the needs of the murder victims' families ignored. And so today, every year in North Carolina, we have 500 or 600 new murder victims' families created. And we have virtually no funding for programs to help them. So we actually would advocate for a whole slew, an array of programs to help murder victims' family members. Let's abolish the death penalty, take the millions of dollars, some of the millions of dollars we would save by doing so, and put them into programs to help provide counseling, maybe if the breadwinner of the family is murdered, help with some economic, provide some economic help for murder victims' family members, the way we do other victims if there's a hurricane or something like that. This is just a whole array of help that these families need that they aren't getting, except a few of them are told, well, we're going to help you by strapping the offender down and poisoning him to death, and you get to watch, and that's it. And we say that's not helping murder victims at all. And, you know, there are murder victims' families who are involved with us. One of our, the vice president of our board is Tom Fuel. He's from Chapel Hill, and he suffered the loss of his 8-year-old daughter in 1985. She was murdered here in Chapel mm-hmm. Hill, and Tom has spoken wide and far about that, and how he is grateful that no more violence came from that horrible tragedy.
Great. Well, I know that also one of the things you've done, I think in 1999, was start the North Carolina Moratorium Now campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about this initiative? You're working to abolish the death penalty, but you're calling just for moratorium.
Well, we're in North Carolina, and land of Jesse Helms, and in 1997, the American Bar Association, which is 400,000 attorneys and judges and prosecutors, decided that every jurisdiction in the United States needed a moratorium on executions, and that the situation was far worse than when the Supreme Court declared the practice of the death penalty arbitrary and capricious in 1972. And so here in Chapel Hill, there was a symposium at UNC in 98 about what do we as a community of death penalty activists and academics, how do we respond to this? And the agreement was that we should push for a moratorium in North Carolina. That and a moratorium is essentially a timeout, a recognition that the death penalty is, as the ABA called it, a haphazard maze of unfair practices with no internal consistency. Even if you're in favor of the death penalty, the way it's practiced is worse than arbitrary, capricious, except it tends to go after poor people who couldn't afford a decent attorney or one with resources, and people who kill white people. So coming out of the idea back in the early 80s where towns were nuclear free zones and declared themselves a nuclear, they weren't going to have the town government make arrangements or contracts with nuclear weapons manufacturers. We, in conjunction with a group called the Quixote Center in up in D.C., this was their idea. They asked me to try to work on it in North Carolina, and I agreed. And no one had really been doing it, and we started working on this. And the idea of getting the local governments to pass a resolution calling for a moratorium. I had about the nuclear free thing. I had lived in Tacoma Park, Maryland for a while, and the police cars in Tacoma Park were Volvos because of that. So it was kind of funny. Anyway, the thing was here in Carrboro was the first town to pass a resolution, and I called up Alan Spalt, who was a friend of mine on the Board of Aldermen, on June 1st, 1999. It was a Monday, and there was a Board of Aldermen meeting that night. And I said, Alan, I have this idea. I'd like to, what do you think? He said, well, there's a meeting tonight. Why don't you make some materials? Well, I just was going to drop stuff off to the aldermen. And I, at 7:29, I got there at 7:29 for a 7:30 meeting. I was just going to leave the materials there. And by 7:40, the town had passed the resolution. I wasn't even prepared to speak about it. Oh gosh, Anderson Park. What was his name? Hank Anderson. Hank Anderson said, I'd like time to reread this stuff first. And I said, I agree, but there was this eagerness in the town passed. God bless Carrboro. And then 2 weeks later, we got Chapel Hill, and 6 weeks later, after a real effort, we got Durham. And now we stopped at 39. We should have stopped at 40 or 50, and we could keep going. What we're working with other groups, and we won passage of the North Carolina Senate passing a moratorium bill. It became the first legislative body. The only legislative body in the South to call for a moratorium, and it's still unfortunately the only one. And we're not able to get it passed in the House. And then last year we got a Racial Justice Act passed in the House.
Tell us a little bit
ironically,
about that.
It's simply a bill that a very powerful bill, frankly, that would allow for. Court review of whether race played a part in somebody being sentenced to die, whether the prosecutor decided to pursue capital charges because of the race of the defendant, or whether the jury or anything that happened during the case was during the court hearings was influenced by race. And the bill allowed for statistics to be used, which is a pretty powerful part of the bill, and the House passed it 68-51, and we're in this de facto moratorium right now. That's another thing that has happened, and there were some the North Carolina Medical Board has decided that doctors who participated in executions actively could face losing their license, and they were sued by the state and they lost, and they're appealing that. That's one of the two cases that is holding up executions right now. And this year in the Senate, just as things towards the end of this session, just a few weeks ago, some senators introduced an amendment to the Racial Justice Act to gut the power of the medical board. And some of the supporters of the Racial Justice Act weren't going to go along with that. And it kind of divided the support for it, and we lost. And so I have one point, though, that I want to make today, which is that I don't think we realize how far we have come, we who are opposed to the death penalty, and I hope everybody listening is, but if you're not, I commend you for listening. But we have come so far in North Carolina compared to other southern states. South Carolina basically has virtually no, has no organized effort to reform or call for a moratorium on executions in South Carolina. There's virtually, I have friends in these other states who are, you know, activists and trying, but there's really very little organized effort as, in terms of grassroots organizing in Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas. Georgia, outside of Atlanta, has very little. There's a case of an innocent guy in Georgia who, Troy Davis, who, there's a campaign around that. We've been helping with that. I mean, when you look around the South, it's awful. But when you look at North Carolina, we have been able to, thanks to the work of not just members of People of Faith Against the Death Penalty, but many other groups, the ACLU and other groups, created a number of very significant reforms that have driven down death sentencing rates every year and made the system less horrible, less racist, less likely to sentence people to die. It's still awful, but we have come far, and I want people to be excited about how much we can get done. How, if we, you know, when we lose, you're always like, well, maybe we should have done this, should have done that, should have, could have, would have, and we can do so much more. You know, there's plenty more to do. We're going to come back fighting next year. I also want to mention that Ellie Kinnaird, our senator, her big push is to have a bill to abolish the death penalty for people who with severe mental illness. And that's kind of going to be the big trend in the next 10 years in the abolition movement across the country. And where she's pioneering it, there's only, there was an effort in New York State and they abolished the death penalty instead. They were successful in that. Really, a judge declared it unconstitutional, and the state government hasn't been able to, the legislature hasn't been able to get a bill, a pro-death penalty bill passed. So they effectively won that effort. But, you know, so Ellie is putting this together, and we're very happy that she's been able to bring in the mental health community as the leaders of this. Mm-hmm. It's not my group. We're not doing a lot of work on this at all. I mean, it's going to take a lot of time. It's not going to be something we're going to turn around right away. But, you know, there's a lot of movement happening. We have come far. And it just, it's sad that we're still executing people. And I'm saying we're in better shape than we are, than our neighbors to the south and west of us are here in the south. But at least we have come far.
This is such a painful and difficult issue, working with people on death row, people who are accused of heinous crimes, working with victims' families. How do you keep going with this kind of work?
Well, the thing is, I'm not sure I've done a very good job of taking care of myself, you know. But you do in this work see, you know, you deal with some of the worst things that people are capable of doing. It's unbelievable, some of the things that not only people on death row did, and most of them are not innocent, but also the incredible things they experienced as children. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but those cliches are all true nightmare experiences human beings experienced, and it's the cycle of violence we see continuing. So there's that, and but you see the best things that people are capable of too. You meet people like Tom Fuel, who can kind of rise above the kind of culture of vengeance that we sometimes feel in our culture, and really get to me what it's really about being a human being, and there's just incredible incredible people I've met, family members of people on death row, people on death row, people who've survived death row, innocent people, just activists around the state. There's a guy who just retired as an instructor down at Coastal Carolina Community College, Vernon Kelly, just an incredible, to me, heroic guy who in Jacksonville, North Carolina, Marine capital of the United States, one of the first places to pass a resolution for a moratorium was the student body, government body of Coastal Carolina Community College. Wow. In Jacksonville, because of Vernon Kelly, this great activist down in the middle of Jacksonville. Yeah, terrific guy. So you meet these inspiring people, people like you too, the people here, that you know, that keeps me going. And we have some great people in the office working with us. You know, we have a lot of students and young people who we have a young person joining us at the end of this month who's going to work with us for a year through the Jesuit Volunteer Program, and another person who is finishing. Today's her last day, and she's going to join our staff for another year. And so it's just there's people all around to keep you going.
Great. Well, you've certainly talked about what difference one person can make, or a group of people like the Carver and Chapel Hill Town Councils, or the person at the Carolina Community College. But for our listeners who are tuned in today and concerned about the death penalty, concerned about the North Carolina Racial Justice Act, what can ordinary people do?
The most important thing is to if you really want to end the death penalty, build a relationship with each of these people, with your state senator, with your state representative. That's Ellie Kinnaird. She needs to hear from you, to thank her for her work and ask her ideas and share yours with her. She would love that, and she needs that. Verla Insko, Joe Hackney, the Speaker of the House, they need to hear from their constituents. Let's have people from Chapel Hill meet with our district attorney. I have done so, and he needs to hear from constituents. So talk with now I haven't done this, but I've called, and we're sort of working on making an appointment. I'm going to meet with the police chief of Carbo I've sort of introduced myself over the phone, but just to mm-hmm. try to get to know her. When people start doing that and asking, so I don't like the death penalty, and why do you support it, or do you? You'd be very surprised at what you hear. I think half the district attorneys in the state, and I've talked to many of them, would be fine if the death penalty was removed from the books. And that may be surprising, but they have told me that. And I was recently gave a talk, and I mentioned that, and a DA was in the room. And he came up to me afterwards, and he said, yeah, that's true. So we'd be surprised. You know, the death penalty is, Helen Prejean calls it like, it's kind of like the Berlin Wall, and it's eroding from inside, and it's going to be pushed over one of these days. It will be.
Well, thank you so much for being with us this morning, Steve, and thank you for the work that you and the people of faith against the death penalty are doing. There's certainly so much more to be done on this, and it's great to hear the encouragement about how far we've come, but we all know that there's still a long way to go. So I hope that our listeners this morning will take this opportunity to write to your local legislators, to give them a phone call, to thank them for their support, to sign on to some of this important work that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. We just, if I can mention our website, it's www.pfadp.org. That stands for People Faith Against Death Penalty. Or just Google us, and you can get to our website. There's other suggestions for taking action, including asking your pastor to endorse the Racial Justice Act.
Thank you. This is Lucy Lewis with The Wilpf Show. Hope you'll tune in next week from 7:30 to 8 o'clock in the morning. You've been listening to WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carborough, your listener-supported community radio station, and we are going to be followed now by Amy Goodman with Democracy Now! Thank you for joining us today.